Time now for Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced in part with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Fascinating book out called Chinese-ness by Wing Young Cui, who was a Duluth resident, talked a lot about and photographed a lot about growing up Chinese in this community. And because we cannot resist an opportunity to bring in special guest stars, conducting the interview today, Annie Dugan. She is the former curator of the Duluth Art Institute and an art educator here in town. And our interim station manager, John Hino, is a professional photographer. So we have tapped him also to join us this morning for the conversation. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wing, are you there? Yeah, there we go. Look, we got everybody. So I'm going to turn this over to the artist and the photographer to talk a little bit with Wing about this book. Take it away.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thanks so much for being here with us, Wing. I was really taken with this book. I was familiar with your photography work before the book. And what I want to talk a little bit about first was the fact that in previous books, it's been more on the photography side. And I think what I love is that you bring your talent for journalistic writing as well in this, and the mix between documentary, memoir, photography, language, storytelling. It's you deal with a really complicated subject matter and come at it in all of these different ways. And I just would love to hear you talk about the choice to do that.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, my degree is in journalism. I started off at UMD. I was a pre-journalism major and finished my degree in Minneapolis at U of M. And I was trained to be a reporter, not a photographer. And I bought my first camera in between my sophomore and junior year and thought, it's really just got into photography and considered switching majors. But I got my BA in journalism and then started my career as a freelance journalist and doing photography. And so I think this is my seventh book, and it's the first book that's not a horizontal format, vertical
right.
format, because a third of it is text. And it's really so it's there's been text in my other books and interviews that I did and things that I wrote, but this is by far the most I've ever written for a book, and there's a lot of different concepts, but a lot of it I'm just telling people stories.
Yeah, and I think I love the wording that you use of cultural uncertainty, and the approach to what is a really complicated, I mean, whenever anyone says identity, it's this charged term. It's one that people, I think, get nervous about, you know, what mistakes or missteps, or you are willing to go a lot of places literally, but also in the sense of you're willing to explore a lot of really challenging things. And I'm just curious how were you nervous about exploring this topic?
Well, the book isn't about Chinese culture or identity politics, per se. It's about the things that fall into the cracks, things about my life and how other people think about identity through the prism of Chineseness. And all the people in the book are not necessarily of Chinese descent. So I give a lot of presentations. To schools, all different organizations, and this is what I talk about. I talk about identity. I ask students, how many people feel that if I asked you, what are you, how many would know for sure, could say for certainty, this is what I am. Even I do this with teachers. Few raise their hands. Then I ask them, how many people feel you're still figuring it out? I get more hands. How many people feel you are many things? it's hard to say what is the most you. And so I think that certainly if you had asked me that question when I was growing up in Duluth, we were one of the we were the only Asian family in our neighborhood, and I was the only Asian student in my entire grade school. And so I think that if you had asked me that question when I was growing up, I think that question would have confused me, because what I was at home was different than what I was in school. And so I'm the only non-immigrant in my family. And first words to come out of my mouth was my mother's tongue, Poisson-Wa, which is a dialect in the Guangzhou, Taishan area. Actually, it's in the Taishan area, not Guangzhou. And so I remember I only spoke to my mother in Taishanhua. I could see that my Chinese-ness and my Minnesota-ness confused me. Because when I was growing up in Duluth, my fellow Duluthians would ask me, "Where are you from?" And I would go, "I'm from Duluth." And then they go, "No, where are you really from?" I would go, "I am really from Duluth."
Right, right.
So,
right.
And then, you know, I was formed by Duluth culture. I was formed by American culture, pop culture. There's a photo in the book. One of my first subjects was my mom. There's a photo in the book of my mom sitting next to the television in the living room. And she always sat in that chair right next to the television, facing away from the television. And my mom, she had a lot of influence over me. You know, she was my mother. But whatever influence she had to compete with what came out of that box, popular culture.
That was such
Go ahead.
That was such a powerful image, because it tells the image tells an amazing story, and the words tell an amazing story, and they both have this resonance. So I really appreciate it.
Wing, I just want to add that you know, what a fantastic book. I've really enjoyed going through it. One of the questions I had when I look at photography books and when I approach a project myself, there's always a question of to what extent is this structured plan thought out in advance, and to what extent is room left for serendipity? And I think I know the answer, but I'd rather hear it from you as you approached this project. To what extent did you have everything sort of structured and planned out when you started shooting, and to what extent did you leave some room for serendipity?
Well, all of my projects, you know, you start somewhere, or maybe you start and start over and start over and start over. But it's never clear to me where it's going to end up. And I think when I'm photographing, I don't pre-visualize. I'm just reacting to what I see, reacting to life. And then you take a lot of pictures, and you figure out, you know, what is it that I have? So I went, you know, I mean, I started the project when I went to China for the first time in 2010. And, you know, I coming from Minnesota, where I felt like inside I felt like everyone else, but outside I felt like I stuck out. Then I go to a place where I kind of look like everyone else, but I really feel like I stick out. Hmm. And I feel like they can tell by just the way I walk, my attitude, that I am not from there. So, and my Americanness, I think, was apparent to people, to people, even before I opened my mouth and spoke, you know, with my broken Chinese. And so I think that that was when I came up. I started thinking, "Wow, you know, what if my family had never left China? What if I was born and raised in China? How would I have turned out differently?" So I started thinking about this idea of Chinese-ness. And you know, you add ness to a noun, and it changes it to an abstract noun. And that's what I felt about identity that it's abstract, not just mine. What is identity? How does it shift? Does it migrate? When is it authentic? When is it appropriated? Appropriate. Appreciated. When is it kitsch?
Right.
When is it sacred? And who gets to decide?
Let me
how
ask
to define.
Let me ask you a question as a journalist, an aspiring photographer. I'm curious, from your perspective, which encompasses so many of these things, as you're photographing, or perhaps as you're coming back and looking at what you have photographed, when do you think, or what elevates a photograph from a journalistic photograph, which is a record of something that happened, which serves to try to help us tell a story, what elevates that to art?
I don't think of it necessarily as an elevation. I've been a freelance photojournalist. I think there's a difference, though, and I'm not saying one is better than the other, but ambiguity. When you're on assignments or when I'm a commercial photographer, you kind of know what your client wants, what the art director wants, what your editor wants. When I'm photographing, I'm just reacting. I'm trying to translate this piece of reality in front of me into this set of two-dimensional facts that we call photographs. And I'm drawn to photographs that are like life, full of suggestion, yet open to interpretation. If 10 people look at a photograph of mine and think 10 different things, have 10 different interpretations, to me, it's a more interesting photograph. If 10 people think the same thing, to me, it's an advertisement. So I think I'm never sure the meaning of my photographs. And I think the authors, the photographers, doesn't own the interpretation.
Wing, kind of following up on that, because I was thinking a little bit about ambiguity when I was going through the pages, in the context of how you may have wrestled with how many words to include. Because generally speaking, I think you look at an image, and if there's no words, there's a greater possibility for different interpretations. And yet, you were on a mission to kind of, provide information about Chinese-ness. And so, in some context, I could see where ambiguity would kind of be the enemy. It must have been interesting looking at the images and deciding how many words do I need to go with this, or does it speak for itself?
Yeah, I think combining words with a photo. How do you provide context without what's enough information and how much is too much? And I think the way I write, I didn't intentionally try to write a certain way. I think this is sort of what I'm drawn to, just like photography. I'm drawn to a certain kind of ambiguity of writing, where you're telling people stories, but it's still nuanced, complicated, and a bit open-ended. I think, you don't want the words to overwhelm the photograph and vice versa. So I think the stories are fairly short, and I went to almost everyone that I could after I had done most of the writing, and sent them the photo and what I wrote, and asked if they were okay with it, if they wanted to change it. And so people wrote back and changed some things. Things for more clarity or things that were more correct. So I really feel like this was a large-scale collaboration.
It's such a timely book. In reading it, I couldn't help think of our current political climate, and I'm just wondering if you're thinking about this current immigration debate alongside of these explorations into you know, who sort of has the right to call themselves certain things or to claim identity in certain ways. And I'm just wondering, do you try and just keep that completely, do you try and keep politics completely out of your thinking, or is that filtering into what you're exploring?
Well, I think that to me, what I'm interested in, or what it seems like I'm interested in, I mean, I don't think I have a grand sort of way of looking at these things. I really am just reacting. And I can see that looking back at my work that I'm not interested so much in how life should be. I'm interested in what it looks like and trying to get at, I don't know, a certain realness and put it out there. And then whoever looks at it, you think whatever it is you want to think. What I do in schools a lot, something I call, what do you see? I show them a photograph of mine, a photograph that I know are going to elicit quite a range of interpretations. And I tell them, there is no right or wrong. Everyone has a different perspective. And it's useful to understand what your perspective is and how is it different from the other people in the room. So I ask them for their perspectives. Even if you're the only person in the room that thinks like you, how do you look at life? Because a lot of how you look at photographs shows you how you look at life. Really, and then I reveal a backstory that will complicate and challenge whatever it is that they thought. And the goal isn't to guess the backstory. The backstory is just another point of view. A lot of it's my point of view. Hopefully, what this does is open students to points of view they hadn't considered. So how do you really have a conversation at that point of view that's not confrontational, where you don't point fingers at each other? Now, to me, life is great. I think I'm never sure what is right or what is wrong. Or I feel that a lot of life is, I know, there are things that people told you or society tells you or history books tell you or textbooks tell you of what life is like. And then you grow up and you go, life is not like that. So I think the central debate, you could say, in this country and everywhere, you know, it's the debate of who gets to say who is more American. I was not considered really American when I was growing up in Minnesota.
One of the things,
then I go to China, I'm not really Chinese.
One of the things.
So what am I?
One of the things I think is so fascinating about your work is the ambiguity that you talk about sort of filters into, you know, the same kind of ambiguity that you talk about in your writing or in your photography can also be applied to some of these questions of identity that you're talking about. But I'm so impressed at the idea of this work as a continuation of some of the work that you're doing in schools with the idea of, look, we're having a conversation about different points of view, but nobody's screaming and shouting, and everybody is listening. And that seems to me, you know, if you want to take it and try to apply it on the larger scale, to me that seems like a really important piece of a puzzle, an important skill to learn.
Yeah, basically I'm just showing students what I do so that they can do it. I tell them that I photograph thousands of strangers. You know what most of them think of that?
What?
That's creepy.
It is a different world, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah. So I say, you know, how many people feel you're a stranger to most of the students in your school? Most raise their hands, especially if it's a public school.
Sure.
Or you're a stranger to most of the people in your own neighborhood. So I will show them what I do and that they do it. They photograph each other. They have conversations with each other, and I pair them up. I have them select. I say, walk up to a student in this classroom Everyone stand up, walk over to someone that you don't really talk to, and you're going to have a conversation with them. And it's something I call a chalk talk. You'll notice in the book that I approach people with chalkboards and ask them different questions, and then they wrote whatever they wanted to write on chalkboard that reflects or reveals something about them. So this is what I do in schools. I have students have a chalk talk, have a conversation with each other, and then write something on a chalkboard that reveals something about them, and then they photograph each other. When I tell them they are going to have this conversation with someone, with another student they don't really talk to, they all go, oh,
right,
that's awkward. I don't know that person. And the questions that I provide, you know, one of the questions is, what are you? And, or how do you think other people see you? What don't they see? You know, how much of your identity is imposed by the people around you, by society, by popular culture? And so then I ask them if, I mean, no one really wants to do it. Then I ask them, if you just talk to your friends the rest of your life, what's your life going to be like? Even a sixth grader would shake their head and say, it's not good.
We have an echo chamber. Even as kids, we find that place where, you know, we try to get into that comfortable place. We need to be more comfortable with awkwardness. When you are an awkward adult, as I frequently am, you have to make your peace with awkward, I guess. And that's maybe not a bad thing. Wing, I wish we had time to continue to talk with you. We've run out of time. We've run over time. But thank you so much for being our guest this morning and talking about your book. Thank you so much to Annie Dugan. She's the curator, a former curator of the Duluth Art Institute. John Hino, professional photographer and KUMD's interim station manager, brought them in this morning to ask some questions and have a fascinating conversation. Wing, thanks again for joining us this morning.
Thanks to all.
Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced in part at KUMD with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.